Let's do it.
Welcome to the Film Experience. It's our special, another special edition. Last week we did all reader questions, and this week, the Oscar nomination reactions. It comes but once a year. This is your host, Nathaniel, and I'm here with Murtada.
Hello, everyone.
And Nick Davis.
Hey, everybody. Hey, all y'all.
Where to even begin other than Marina de Tavera?
That was so exciting to see that name, because it was a name that nobody else has put on any list all year round. So those, I live for those kinds of surprises.
This is going to sound like wishful retroactive thinking, but there was a moment during like Alfonso Cuarón's like third or fourth acceptance speeches where I thought to myself, what if Yalitza and Marina both get nominated? Because he said the same thing about them in every acceptance speech. Like, they're the heart and soul of the film. And I had that moment for a split second. I thought, that's crazy. And so I just dismissed it. And I should have just gone for it. Why not?
I totally predicted it. I just didn't publish it. Y'all don't know what I did.
I mean, it is fun to read, like, Roma and The Favorite lead the nominations with 10 each, and then to go look down and see that they nominated between them 5 actresses for Oscars, which just means that they are, you know, women's stories. Like, that was a big positive of the day.
But then the men's stories don't even need good reviews to get nominated.
That's true.
And it's hard to get better reviews than The Favorite and Rome I got.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw Amir Sultani's post yesterday, but because I had kind of flippantly, he was asking how The Favorite has 10 nominations and has like consistently scored them with almost every group, even as other things have bobbed in and out, and why are we not talking about it as a threat to win? And I said, because it stars lady people. And he said, like, that can get really self-perpetuating, though, right? Because between Roma and The Favorite, like, the Academy is showing that they're actually taking those stories seriously. And that sometimes the sort of buzzes that we create around what people will or will not do, or who is or is not a favorite, even if we're reacting to really old habits, like, are probably self-perpetuating, which was a really fair point. Like, I wish I could believe that a story about the women in Roma that was not filmed in such a kind of auteurist style by a guy whose like autobiographical narrative has been so heavily stamped on it would have attracted the same notice. But I don't want to be like, you know, stingy or paranoid on a really good day. But it's great to see those actresses nominated, because it does suggest that people were relating to that movie as much more than just Cuarón's passion project. But yeah, jury's still out, I think. On how interested people are in women's stories. But hopefully, I would love to be wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, I also noticed one thing about the nomination. Like, all of the movies missed something. Like, Roma missed editing. Black Klansman missed Joan David Washington. Obviously, Green Book and A Star is Born were not nominated for director. But the two movies that are nominated for Best Picture and basically got every single nomination they were hoping for are The Favorite and Vice.
Mm-hmm.
So, does that make The Favorite The Favorite? Because it's nominated for editing, and which is, you know, Roma missed, for instance.
Yeah.
I'm really pleased about The Favorite's nomination for editing, because I was not expecting it. Same thing with Black Klansman, even though the rest of that editing category I just rolled my eyes at. Sorry. But, I mean, Black Klansman, you can see, even if you didn't think the editing was good, as I do, that it's one of those most editing things. But even so, I thought it would be passed over, just from the history of, you know, how Spike Lee films are performed at the Oscars.
Yeah.
But again, this goes to your point, Nick, you know, things have changed within the Academy. At least a little bit, as we've seen in the past 10 years.
Yeah.
Not just the past year.
Yeah.
It's been gradually changing for about, it seems like, since the reign of Cheryl Boone Isaac.
Yeah.
Where's her honorary?
You know, one thing about the coverage, we only have one day of coverage, so who knows if this is true or it's going to change, but there is a lot of sort of like, now that Spike has been nominated, it's like he's never been nominated before. And I don't know, we're taking it for granted that Cuarón is going to win Best Director, but there is a lot of love for Spike out there, and there is seems to be more coverage, just people talking about the fact that this is his first ever nomination in that category. And obviously, you know, he could just win Best Screenplay, but his movies is more about him being a director than writing that screenplay. So maybe Cuarón finally actually has competition now that Black Klansman basically, except for Joan David Washington, got every nomination they were gunning for.
Mm.
With the narrative for Spike. Like, if we're giving Glenn her, you know, career Oscar, let's give Spike one.
I think it doesn't seem like the voters always worry about, like, you know, nominating or giving the award in a category that's less that director's brand, if, like, that's the easy place to vote for them. So I won't be surprised if they use screenplay for that. They may also just really like the screenplay. But, I mean, it'd be great if there were a race.
Oh, you mean for Spike to win in screenplay?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I could see that happening. You know, a movie we haven't talked about, I don't think, at all on the podcast is The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, which I did watch.
And okay.
I'll leave it at that. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. It was a frustrating experience for me because it just brought back to me that when filmmakers don't ever interrogate their own worldview, it can be kind of like, oh, come on. Like, the pessimism and the nihilism, all that, there's just no... Maybe we did discuss this on the podcast, because I feel like I've said this before, but...
We discussed it last week, Nathaniel.
Well, say what you were going to say.
All right, moving on. No, it was frustrating for me, because... when you have a collection of short films, which I actually think is an underused form for features, I think it's kind of cool. Like, remember Paris, I Love You, or Paris, Je T'aime, and movies like that, omnibus movies or short film collections, I think it's kind of a cool form that is rarely used. But I just wanted more variety in tone. Yeah. Because it just seemed just relentlessly harsh.
Yeah. I mean, the minute they announced Mary Zofries for Best Costume Design, I was like, bye-bye, Deborah Granik, because they just moved it from original to adapted like 2 weeks ago or something like that. And when that happens, it always gets nominated. And, you know, they love the Coens at the writing branch. Literally, I'm happy for Mary Zofries, but it was the most depressing name call of the day just because I knew that Deborah Granik now is not a nominee.
It was more depressing than Green Book for editing? It's sort of a rhetorical question.
I'm trying not to mention that movie.
Okay, well, I did it for you.
Let's just say anything to do with that movie is the most depressing thing of the Oscars of all time. How about that?
Oh, come on. I'm sorry. The my thing is Bohemian Rhapsody. I'm sorry. I think it's awful. And I just don't understand it getting even one nomination, and it has five.
For sound editing.
That's supposed to be the category for recording special sound effects and, you know, that sort of thing. And I'm like, yeah. What?
It has nothing interesting to do with playing a bunch of songs on cue.
Yeah, that's like, if you were going to nominate it in one category, I can kind of excuse sound mixing. Okay. Yeah, sure. But everywhere else, I'm kind of like, what?
Yeah. But Buster Scruggs, speaking of the intractable pull toward death. Yeah, I find the movie a little obvious. And I feel like it's supposed to be a kind of big reveal. Maybe not. I mean, I think the movie might kind of be counting on you to have already worked out what is tying all these stories together by the end, and so then you're just having an epiphany about what you already suspect or something. But beyond the fact that I just think some of those stories are not so great, like, I think the first story is just dumb and kind of gross. Like, these just maybe seem like rube ways to talk about the Coen brothers, but I just don't know why it's disallowed. And there's just a kind of nastiness to the movie that I think is different from what it's examining, I think. The last couple stories turned me around on it a little bit, but...
I did love the denouement, but I just... You know, given that thematic through line, I thought the last short was very strong.
Mm-hmm.
But I just didn't care for what came before it.
Yeah.
And even the one I was most emotionally invested in pissed me off by the end, which was Zoe Kazan short.
Yeah.
Because I loved both Zoe and Bill Heck in that.
Yeah, he especially, I think, is really great. But, yeah, but I'm also somebody who, like, if the Coen brothers had only made Fargo, my life would go on. Like, they just don't register that much with me, or we're just not on the same wavelength, I think. There's a couple others I'm happy that they made, but, you know, there's only one that I would actually feel it in my heart if it didn't exist. And a lot of their stuff, I could just take or leave. So I'm not the most interesting person to talk to about Buster Scruggs.
Well, I think that these nominations prove that Netflix money goes a long way in campaigning. But as various people have pointed out on the internet, it wasn't just the money, but the Roma team, especially, they really did work for those nominations. Marina and Yalitza mm-hmm. were everywhere.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, campaigning does work. Not always. They have to like the movie, too. But if they like the movie, you can overperform if you really are out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the Krasinski Blumhouse really campaigned, but they got one nominations for both their, you know, for them personally. Like, only the A Quiet Place got one.
Yeah.
And then, you know, obviously Emily didn't get any of the two she expected, maybe.
Well,
I bet she doesn't do a lot of expecting. That's my guess about Emily Blunt on nomination morning.
Probably, yeah.
If she knows what's good for her at this point.
Yeah. But you know what? I'm, like, happy with the nomination in Best Actress for Roma. I have to say, watch the video of Yalitza reacting to her nomination. Like, so fun. So full of joy. Like, I watched that video. I was so happy for her. I'm happy that that category has a little bit of color in it. Hooray for that. You know, I'm happy Roma got both their actresses in. That's great for that movie, because now the story is more than just this is about Alfonso Cuarón. It's about the actresses, too. So, like, the narrative coming out from that is really great, and I'm really happy for Best Actress. It's a good nomination. Like, everybody in that category did great work.
It's a super solid lineup, yeah. And of all the ways that fifth nomination could have gone, that probably is my favorite. At least as much for all those connotations of it that you described. Like, the performance itself, I'm a little bit mixed about. But, like, you know, it's also kind of the nature of that performance, I think. Like,
yeah.
And it certainly, like, serves the purposes of the movie, and she worked really hard for it. So, like, yeah. Would I rather see that than, like, Nicole Kidman in Destroyer? Absolutely. You know, like, nothing wrong with Nicole Kidman, but, it, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Should I let that pass? Disparaging Nicole on this podcast?
I'm not disparaging anyone. I just, you know, would I rather see Yalitza Aparicio have this enormous breakthrough and Nicole have her sixth nomination or whatever it is? Yes, I would rather see Yalitza.
Well, my feeling about this, and, you know, it's complicated, but I tend to not enjoy nominations for non-actors, because I tend to think of them as director achievements, which is the same issue I sometimes have when children are nominated, where I was like, is it, you know, the best director? Sure. But I don't know. Not that I don't think Destroyer is one of Nicole's best. I'm not that depressed about her not making it. I was more like hoping it would be very left field, like a Toni Collette, which I knew was insane, but, cause with the non-actors, I always feel like it's like a novelty kind of thing. Like you'll never hear the person's name again. So it feels kind of like, because hasn't Yalitza said that she's not continuing to act after this?
I have no idea, but, you know, I also can't imagine how we would know that. Not whether she said it, we could know that, but, like, I think there'll be people who'll be interested in working with her again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I'm just thinking of the other, you know, non-actors who've, you know, been nominated or won in the past, and it just seems kind of like it's always, like, a one-off. You know, like Dr. Hang S. Noor, or,
although he acted a bunch after that.
Or, who am I thinking of? Did he really?
Yeah, he was in a Woody Allen movie, and he, I thought.
Anyway, yes, it's a good performance. Like, it's just my own personal thing when non-actors are nominated, I'm kind of like, huh. Maybe because I love stats so much, so I'm always curious how, like, the movie stars stack up.
Well, if you have this prejudice, none of us on this podcast are ever going to get nominated, so you might need to rethink the box you're putting us in.
One thing that makes nomination mooring really full of, you know, like, there's lots of joyful videos. Like, I love in this age of social media, people just put their videos out.
Yeah.
Like, there's a Spike Lee video, there's a Ruth Carter video, we talked about Yalitza, there's Richard E. Grant. There were so many videos that just made the day, despite everything that's happening with the movies that we don't like, made the day, like, fun. Like, to just watch the video and watch people reacting to it. And it's like, instead of, you know, those statements that everybody used to send out, I'm so honored or whatever. And now you see the actual joy in people's faces. It's like, I think that's a very positive change that happened in the last couple of years.
I wish that I had had time yesterday to, I have only seen literally two of those videos. I saw Spike Lee's and the Bobby Pantelis from Short Film. And I don't even remember.
Oh.
I don't even remember how I chanced upon that one, but it was delightful.
Go ahead. Sorry.
But it was delightful because it's one of those things, like, when you see people reacting in those videos, a lot of time it's like there's this immediate, like, shouting and screaming type of thing that's so, like, emotions that can't be controlled. But then there's usually, like, this beat after where it's really emotional. Other than, like, screaming. And that one's great. Because you could tell that he's going to cry. But the camera cuts off. He shouts, like, really, like, ah! Like, so excited. And then there's this beat, like, I'm an Oscar nominee. It's very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, Richard E. Grant also staged his, his first apartment in London. Obviously not as the names were announced, like, probably a couple hours later. And that was, like, he gave us history and context and built it to how old he is. So that video actually, like, has a story.
Uh-huh.
Should be up for a short film next year.
Yeah. And however many hours later it is, he is still euphoric. Like,
yes.
He can barely finish his sentences. It's so great.
Yeah.
I feel the same way about, I don't know that he did a video, but the euphoria of the nominees, I feel like Richard E. Grant and Sam Elliott all season have been just delighted that this is happening for them.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about it, they've both been in the industry for so long, and this is the first time anything like this has happened. And they've both been very good for so long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sam Elliott didn't have a video, but he had the best quote, which he said, it's about fucking time.
So, what, let's stick to the positives, because I love this train of thought. And I'm sorry, Yalitza, I did meet her, she is delightful. I am happy for her, I was just my thing about non-actors, so I just want to have say that.
She is an actor now, she's an Oscar-nominated actor, Nathaniel. She is going to be in more movies.
I thought I read somewhere online that she said she wasn't going to pursue it, but maybe somebody was speculating and I misinterpreted. So anyway, cinematography, only the second time in history, three foreign films. And sort of the first time in history, three foreign language films, because the previous time, Mel Gibson's movie was one of them. And so, you know, it's a U.S. film, essentially.
Yeah.
And same cinematographer, right? Didn't Caleb Deschanel shoot that, too? Or am I... No, he...
Yeah, he did. Yeah,
The Passion
of the Christ, yeah.
Yeah. I know there'll be divided thoughts about this, and I haven't seen Never Look Away, and I don't, you know, I can't read anybody's mind, but it does seem like the cinematographer's branch is actually, like, really interested in catching up with the overlooked among their dignitaries, and, like, there have even Roger Deakins nominations lately that I just feel like... I mean, Prisoners is a really well-shot movie, but would that have been nominated if they weren't trying to give Roger an award, you know? And so I don't know how they, like, caucus try to make things happen, but, like, I'm for it. And it was another moment of just being excited about, you know, being surprised, even though I still credit you with Practical Magic for at least having detected the possibility. Yeah.
And Nick, I think you're right on the money. I sat through all 190 minutes of Never Look Away, and I don't remember one shot. That was exceptional. So it is pretty, like, is pretty, but it is not very memorable. Mm. So I do think you are right there about it's something that has to do with who actually shot it, that nomination.
Does this count as keeping a positive? That's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
No, it is kind of, you know, we're happy for him, for his career.
We are happy for him, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm even, in a kind of similar way with a much younger person, I'm happy to see Robbie Ryan nominated, even though I will never understand how those extreme wide-angle lenses did not disqualify him from consideration. For cinematography, especially with James Laxton right there. But I'm trying to back off of that because at least we got score.
Yeah. And Robbie Ryan is very, very talented.
Extremely talented.
Yeah. And I will say this, fisheye lenses aside, the candlelight work, like that thing about The Favorite is very cool.
Mm-hmm. Everything else about The Favorite cinematography I think is great.
Yeah. And I was really happy for the Maddie Libatique nomination, too, because I think, you know, it just missed my own list, but it's gorgeously shot, especially the concert.
That's what happened. It's in the five, or it was snubbed. That is
But it was, like, literally my number six. I'm so happy for his nomination.
Yeah. Me too.
Since we're talking about A Star is Born, so is the theory that now Bradley Cooper can concentrate on Best Actor and stop trying to win Best Director, which he was never going to win. He wasn't even nominated. So can he now win back that category? Yes. Can he win it? Can he bring us back some joy into that category? Because it's looking like it's Christian Bale.
I think it's looking like Rami Malek, which is even more upsetting.
I agree with you. Although I wouldn't find Christian Bale that upsetting myself, I think if it turns toward Bradley Cooper, it'll be because of a feeling people now have. I don't whether they feel sorry for him for missing Best Director or whether it just means they have the opportunity to think about the performance or they just want to recognize that he got that all made. But I don't think he's gonna. Again, you guys probably know better than I do, but it just seems like he would rather not have an interview with anybody again if he could pull that off.
Are we back?
We are back. Talking about Bradley Cooper somehow cursed my home and my internet went out.
So let's just go in because Nick has to leave. So we were saying that maybe in the Phase 2 campaign, not his personal sort of interview thing, but just the tenor of the campaign itself will change from concentrating on his directorial achievement to his acting achievement, and that way he can maybe become competitive and save this category for us and get us some joy in.
Perhaps he's one of those actors that doesn't care that much? Or am I misreading it?
I don't. Yeah. I think they all care, no? They all care about awards. I don't know. That's
I think
what
he might be trying to find that Joaquin Phoenix sweet spot where he, like, lets us know that this doesn't mean the world to him, but is really touched when he gets something, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, whatever. It was a little bit tricky to read, like, the kind of full-on press assault for the movie and then his own sort of reluctance to engage, even though, you know, I wouldn't really want to engage either when I watch what everybody goes through on that circuit. So, like, I'd never blame anybody for that. Like, but I think it is going to require people to want to give him an award, even if he is not showing how much he wants it, which is not what they're going to be getting from Rami Malek. And I think that choice almost starts to make itself, which is sad.
Yeah.
I mean,
to quote
Rami
Monique, sometimes it's about the performance.
Yeah. I mean, Rami Malek will have his own treacherous past to navigate in the second phase of the campaign. Was what's gonna come. Yeah, I mean, his movie, there is an article already in The Atlantic about Bryan Singer, so he's gonna have to deal with that.
Yeah.
Oh, with new allegations.
Yeah.
I get the sense, though, that he's, I mean, I haven't finished the article, but it seems like he's already been drafting off this credit for, like, saving the movie from that guy. And so I don't think that's gonna cause him a problem, although it might. Maybe people just won't want to vote for the movie at all, but if they felt that way, they wouldn't have spent $700 million on tickets to it. So, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I really think it's Christian Bale. He's like an actor who is very well respected. People love him, think he's probably one of the best actors working. And he doesn't have a lead Oscar. And this is a movie they obviously loved, giving it 8 nominations. And it is a pretty great performance, even though I don't like the movie. So I think he's in the lead, but we'll see.
That's interesting.
I would be happier with him than Rami Malek, who I do enjoy Rami Malek as an actor in other projects. I just don't think this one is a worthy awards caliber performance.
Yeah.
I was very happy when he won awards for Mr. Robot. So, I'll have to disagree on Christian Bale a little bit. Like, I thought it was a decent performance, but I just felt it didn't feel like a. This is what I sometimes get from biopic performance. It didn't feel like a full characterization, just like an impression. Like, I couldn't connect the dots at all for that character between the flashback scenes. Well, they're all flashbacks, but, like, the early life scenes and the later life scenes in kind of a similar way to, like, the Meryl Streep Iron Lady thing, where it just seems all, like, technical bravura, but it's like, is this the same person you're playing in these two different time periods?
Mm.
That was my feeling about it.
Yeah. I think that's a fair assessment of the disconnection, yeah.
Nick, do you have to go?
Pretty soon.
Well, just warn us so we can record your little goodbye.
I feel like Mary Poppins returns, and I can fly off at any moment.
A door has opened.
That's right. That's right. I'm the Angela Lansbury of this podcast. I'm trying to think if there's any other reaction that I had that was even worth throwing out there.
I will say one happy thing that I thought of. We're finally rescued from the Potterverse.
I think that's so great.
I was
great.
I was worried about it in costumes and production design. We're finally rescued, generally, when they pass on a franchise movie that they've loved. They usually don't go back to that franchise. And I'm like, finally, after 16 years of nominations for this franchise.
Mm-hmm. And I was especially glad to see First Man in production design, especially for a movie that they mostly had kind of dropped. Because in addition to the sound categories, where thank God it held on, because I think it deserves both of those. I think that that's a huge achievement in that movie, the production design. And especially the more I read when I was getting ready to lead a discussion about it, about how much poetic license is actually in that movie, even though it seems to be doubling down on kind of
recreation.
And it just seemed incredibly clever, and it makes such a huge impression. So yeah, I was thrilled about that, because it could have easily been Grindel Fondle or whatever, you know.
I love that you're, whenever you have mentioned that title, it's become a different title. It's kind of like Elizabeth II, The Golden Age, how you gave it a new title every time.
Yeah. Speaking of that one, I didn't realize, I mean, you'd made the point before that Alexandra Byrne maybe should or should not be rewarded for costuming the same story twice.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that Jenny Shearcore also did the makeup for this, having already won for Elizabeth. So those gals are in their wheelhouse.
Yes.
I didn't either with Jenny Shearcore.
Did Jenny Shearcore do both? Because she won for the first Elizabeth.
She won the first one, which I mostly remember because of the three times that she thanked Kate Blanchett, which went from like touching to really sweet to like, girl, you have a crush on me. Come on. I don't know if she did the second one.
Okay.
Maybe after that creepy acceptance speech, she was not allowed on the
I mean, you can imagine wanting to thank Kate Blanchett three times. I don't blame that girl. But
I'm pretty sure we all would.
Yeah.
Even if she wasn't connected to the film we were winning for.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe Rami Malek will thank her. You know what? Thank you.
What nomination? This is a tricky question. What nomination do you not understand, but you're not necessarily opposed to, and you would like someone to make a case for it?
Oh.
It's a tough one.
I don't know.
Or is that too tough?
Do you already have an idea?
No, I just thought it would be an interesting question.
It is an interesting question.
I mean, I don't know. This one is one that I kind of understand, but maybe it's worth talking about. Like Adam Driver in Black Klansman. Like, is this just because they think he is a great actor? Because I don't think that the performance itself warrants the nomination, but he is somebody who, like, everybody acknowledges is great and will be, and will have a long career. Like, is this, we're investing in your future, Adam Driver?
That was the exact one I was thinking about, too.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just agree with all of that. I mean, one thing that I thought really changed from the emphases in the memoir to the movie kind of showcases his character even more, and I feel like it's a little surprising to me that I think there are so many scenes in the movie that seem like, in the way the movie's relating to the audience, it's about us having to assume how uncomfortable he must be having to say all this racist stuff and use the N-word over and over again,
mm-hmm.
and it's just kind of taken for granted that we know that that's like awful for him.
Right.
I guess the character's not really in a situation where he can act his own discomfort with it. Like, I get that, but it just seemed a little flat. And I was kind of surprised that I just thought the movie was giving a lot of airtime to invective that could have been assumed as a plot point while we spent more time with the John David Washington character. So I've never really understood the foregrounding of that character in the way the movie kind of structured it as like a buddy system.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't get a lot from, I didn't think he was bad either, but I didn't see what he was adding to it exactly as an artist.
Hmm. I will say, I do have something to say about this performance. I wouldn't nominate it either, but one thing that I do think really works about that performance in terms of the context of the movie and in terms of Oscar history and sort of dealing with race issues and how they haven't always been very good about that and how they've famously been a very white voting body and all that. I think it's an interesting sort of proxy performance for white people watching the movie. You know, there's that, my favorite scene in the movie with his performance is when Ron Stallworth is interrogating him about, like, isn't this upsetting to you? You know, don't you have skin in the game type of thing as a Jewish man? Yeah. And he has that speech about, you know, I didn't think about it and now it's all I can think about.
Mm.
I think he underplays that moment so well. I think it's such a smart character choice because he's still a little mystified by how large the problem is and that he hasn't reckoned with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is a lot of white people watching the movie. That's something I found interesting about the movie.
Mm. All right, well, you bore out your own request. You made it more interesting for us.
I would have
said the same nomination, and I might have said something about sound editing for A Quiet Place, but maybe I won't pick on the one nomination that movie managed to get. But I'll admit, I think Minding the Gap is totally like fine to good as a documentary, but I have I don't love it, and I think that even though, and I certainly like it better than RBG as a documentary, but it does feel to me like the usual case of sort of rewarding the movie for what it's about, more than necessarily, and I appreciate the sort of editing credit that like the LA Film Critics gave it of like assembling itself from all those years of footage, much of which I'm sure were just filler. But I think that that's a movie that is getting some credit that I'll admit is deserved for like the moments where the friends are kind of pushing each other a little bit, or where the director in particular is explicitly, but more often implicitly challenging his friend who is perpetuating this cycle of violence. But there were a lot of moments where I think that film could have been a little bolder in confronting some of the things that it's about. And the editing actually feels a little bit loose to me. I don't know. I like it fine, but I would be more excited to see either Free Solo or Hale County win. I haven't seen A Fathers and Sons yet.
Mm-hmm. My answer here would be, I think Ready Player One, because I'm willing. I watched it and I understood the whole time I was watching it that wow, this is a lot of visual effects, and like where would you even begin to create something like this? But it also just felt like an animated movie to me, like. Mm-hmm. If you're creating the whole thing in the computer, I'm like, not that animated movies don't have visual effects themselves, but like, I don't quite get it. Cause to me it was just like a clutter of animated, you know, characters.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't understand that nomination. So if you do understand anything about visual effects and you want to explain it to me, please do.
Hmm. I've only seen one movie in the visual effects category, First Man, and that's it. And I have no intention
you
of
rebel.
Seeing...
You rebel.
I have no intention of seeing the other four.
I think Christopher Robin is actually really sweet. I like that movie a lot, but I haven't seen... Yeah, I guess I haven't seen two of them. I do think it's interesting how they didn't do what they usually do and just nominate the visual effects movies that are most Best Picture adjacent. Like the fact that I think you've been clear, Nathaniel, about why you think the visual effects of Black Panther could have been stronger, and I agree with you, but it's still surprising to me that just on general enthusiasm, it didn't show up here.
Yeah. Yeah, that's surprising to me, too, that I definitely predicted it. I assumed love for it would
carry. And if it had been nominated, it would have won, because Best Picture nominee in that category always wins, but or usually. Mm-hmm. Well, I actually have to scoot, but so Nick, I guess this is...
Nick is leaving this conversation as quickly as Ethan Hawke left our Oscar dreams.
Yes.
He was in it almost till the end, and then he...
What a gift for simile. Wow. Okay, talk to you both soon.
All right, bye.
Bye, Nick. You know, I'm seeing Ethan Hawke tonight in True West on Broadway, so...
Look at you. I'm gonna
try to, you know, at the curtain, maybe scream at him, "You were robbed, Ethan!"
Well, maybe he'll get a Tony nomination.
Yes.
Although, they revive that play, like, every 5 seconds, it seems.
Yeah, because actors love it, I think. That's why they revive it, yeah.
Yeah. Now that and Nick... go ahead.
Speaking of Ethan Hawke, you know, First Reform made it, and Bo Burnham and Eighth Grade didn't make it. I guess it was either or. They couldn't actually put them both in, which was what I was hoping for.
Yeah, I was hoping for both too. You know, Eighth Grade, I should have known... I predicted it in this category, original screenplay, but I should have known it's a comic and it's about teenagers. Like, it's not in Oscar's wheelhouse.
Yeah.
I just thought the critical darling nature of it would push it past their usual reticence to honor movies about teenagers.
Mm-hmm. And this is one where, like, you know, no matter how cute and good-looking and charming you are in your appearances, you still cannot, sometimes not get nominated, because Bo Burnham and Elsie Fisher, I mean, I've made a lot of appearances, been to a lot of awards, ceremonies, and been really cute together and charming and, you know.
But in a way, you know, it made both their careers, and they both got several precursor mentions, so... Good on them.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm sure people will look forward to their future work, which is, you know, in a way, what award season should be about. Is that's why I always want people to spread the wealth from organization to organization. It's supposed to be a celebration of great work. So it's just not necessary to have only 5 people recognized in a whole season.
Yeah, that's true. So was there someone... like a career nomination or someone you've loved for a long time or someone you just loved this year that you were really sort of happy to see them get the nomination, even if you were expecting it or not expecting it?
I mean, Glenn Close, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, I love her. But I'm not one of these stans who think she's brilliant in everything. I do think she's one of these actors like Meryl Streep, not to knock Meryl, where people just automatically grant every performance as sort of that it's high caliber even before they watch it. And I'm not like that at all with either of them or anyone really. Because I do think Glenn Close has given bad performances, but I genuinely think she's great in The Wife. So I was very happy for her.
Yes. I had the same feeling about Rachel Weisz. I just have fallen in love with her again this year with the 2 movies she made, Disobedience and The Favorite. Both amazing performances, and it all started, I heard her in this interview for Disobedience where she said to take on a project, it has to be transgressive. I just loved that, and I was just like, oh, this is somebody who really thinks about, you know, what work they're putting in, and she's taken her career like a rung above, I feel, this year, and that's just like nice for that to get recognized. So
yeah, I did. There is an interview with her coming up on The Film Experience. And she impressed me with her answer about, you know, this exact thing, like your career, it's like you've hit a peak. And so it's a little stay tuned to her response to that.
Oh, exciting. I can't wait to read it.
I'll put it up this week.
Yeah. And if we're talking about the favorite, like, you know, it's like all three actresses were great, but Emma Stone is somebody I really love, and now she is a 3-time Oscar nominee. Mm-hmm. And I think somebody mentioned on Twitter I saw, which is a cool stat, that every time she's been nominated, her movie has been nominated for Best Picture and led the nomination count.
Yeah.
So she's a new Oscar power. Do not underestimate Emma Stone.
Yeah. Yeah, I do think she's one of these actresses who is so popular that she's weirdly underappreciated. Like, she's not underappreciated in terms of awards and nominations, mm-hmm. but she's underappreciated in terms of the caliber of her actual talent, I think.
Mm. Yes. I mean, she's, like, from Easy A, you could tell that this is somebody very, very talented.
Yeah.
And similar to Rachel Weisz, I think she's choosing great projects. Like, mm-hmm. people always talk about the sort of, like, best actress or best supporting actress slump, which in most cases doesn't actually have to do with the actresses themselves, but more with what movies are being produced and offered to them and what mm-hmm. movies Hollywood is making. But she is in no best actress slump. In fact, her choices after winning the Oscar have been, you know, really interesting and seems to be like, you know, she's on definitely an upward trajectory.
Yeah. And, the whole thing of like people falling asleep on how great she was in Battle of the Sexes is so weird to me, but she had just won, and sometimes that happens.
Yeah.
Okay, here's a question for you. Which career are you most into? You know, Rachel Weisz obviously should not apply to this question because we were just talking about she took up her career at a new level with this one.
Mm-hmm.
Who's somebody who you think this nomination might spur something like that in, where you think the next thing could be really spectacular?
I mean, frankly, I'm excited to see if Lady Gaga is going to continue acting because, mm-hmm. You know, that was a great performance. It's not, I wouldn't nominate it, but it's sort of like for your debut, it's definitely an impactful performance mm-hmm. and something that, you know, people are noticing, and she's getting accolades for it. And although she is a star in another medium, is she now going to act more, and what does that mean? So that's like an exciting sort of career to contemplate what could happen, because I'm sure she's going to get offers. So what is she going to do next? Mm-hmm. Is this the start of something like, you know, a Barbra Streisand career, or is she going to be somebody like
Jennifer Hudson?
Yes. Or, you know, somebody who only makes a movie every few years. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one. Somebody I'm very curious about in terms of what they do next is Regina King. You know, she has a very, very healthy TV career, but she has not been working in the movies for quite a long while because of, I think, that she was getting such good roles on TV. And obviously her fame keeps increasing and the sort of her reputation keeps increasing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping she becomes like another kind of Viola Davis.
Who has defied,
like, ageism or whatever, and she's more popular in her 50s than she was in her 40s. You know, Regina King is 48 years old, which is usually when the roles start drying up for actresses.
Mm-hmm.
But Regina is obviously at the peak of her gifts right now. So I'm totally curious if she can translate that into something beyond just being, like, a Emmy magnet.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, the next thing she's doing is an HBO show, but that doesn't mean that she can't also make movies.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people now transfer easily between TV and movie, and, mm-hmm. you know, even the big movie stars are doing it. So, yeah, that's an exciting career to look forward to, yeah.
And I'm also curious, this will sound against everything I've been saying all season, but I'm really curious how Rami Malek will follow this up. Because he's not probably easy to cast.
Mm-hmm.
I should preface this by saying I think he's very attractive, but he's weird looking in terms mm-hmm. of a leading man.
Yes.
I think he's very attractive, but you know, a lot of times when you're not traditionally handsome, mm-hmm. you have a harder time getting the leading man roles.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, you know, because when he's made movies before, it's always been kind of supporting roles or, you know, that sort mm-hmm. of thing. And I'm really curious what he does from here.
Yeah. I mean, I read something that he had to turn down the Bond villain in the next Bond movie because of some, you know, scheduling. But maybe that's the kind of thing that he will get. Because when you were talking about sort of his looks, I was thinking of somebody like Javier Bardem, who's obviously very attractive, but also his looks are kind of a little not the classic leading man looks. Mm-hmm. But he also had like a thriving career, and he did supporting roles, sort of like you become cast in good antagonist part as opposed to like the protagonist. So maybe mm-hmm. that's something that will happen to Rami Malek. But yeah, that's exciting for him.
Yeah. And who do you think is never coming back to Oscar nominations? This is a bitchy question, but it's not necessarily as bitchy as it sounds, because a lot of great people only get one nomination in their career, or it just suddenly yeah. ends for no reason.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, of the actors, or just in general. I mean, I don't know. Richard E. Grant, maybe. You know, I hate to pick on him, but that's such a great performance, but it's also so surprising that he was cast in it.
Yeah.
So hopefully that's not true and he comes back and surprises us with, you know, more roles, but that would be my, of the 20 acting mm-hmm. act nominees, I would say him.
He does have a part in the new Star Wars movie. So that doesn't necessarily mean anything, because sometimes, you know, like, people made a big deal about, like, say, Gwendolyn Christie being in a Star Wars movie, but then she was behind this helmet the whole time. It's not like it matters, you know.
Yeah.
But if it's a big role, or an interesting villain role or something,
mm-hmm.
maybe with this Oscar nomination and people finally realizing he's been great for decades, if it's a good big role, maybe this will open up lots of interesting older man parts. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
That's the best case scenario, because he's been great since the 80s. So.
Yeah. What is your answer to this question?
My answer to this question. This is probably going to sound insane, but I think if Mahershala Ali wins again, as he's expected to, this might be the end of his Oscar career. Because sometimes when people win with seemingly no effort whatsoever,
mm-hmm.
really quickly, and two, they just stop
mm-hmm.
being somebody that they feel like awarding.
Yeah.
You know, Christoph Waltz had the high profile parts after his two wins, but then nobody cared.
Yeah, I mean, nobody cared about him in Big Eyes, and I can't really actually remember what else he's been
but
in.
But he's been in a lot of big projects since then, but it's like, oh, Christopher Waltz. Like, it's like too much too soon. I think that also is kind of why Tom Hanks has had a problem getting nominated again.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was nominated so frequently for a while, and he won back-to-back, and I mm-hmm. think they kind of just like, oh, yeah,
But, I mean, if Mahershala Ali becomes Tom Hanks, basically one of the biggest movie stars and one of the most respected actors in Hollywood, that's even if no more Oscar nominations, I think he will be fine.
No, I think he will be fine, too. I'm just saying that danger, when you reward people a lot in the beginning, that danger is a danger for actors.
Yes, yes.
Of people feeling like, it's kind of like Meryl Streep winning her third so long after she won her first two. I mean, obviously she had a million nominations, but the beginning of her speech was so how that sometimes works. Like, oh, not her again. You know, when she made that joke about people.
Yeah. Yes.
Being tired of her.
Yes.
And I do, I will say I'm surprised that Viggo Mortensen has been in the conversation three times.
Mm-hmm.
This is his third nomination. I love him as an actor. Like, I was so crazy about those first two nominations. But in both cases, they were not, they seemed like they might not happen. And this mm-hmm. one seemed the most locked up of his three nominations, but it's mm-hmm. the least of the three nominations. So I'm curious, like, is it three and done now? You know, because it seems like a lot for that career. Like, he's famous, mm-hmm. but he's not someone that people are constantly talking about, you know.
Yeah. I mean, frankly, I've always felt each nomination, I'm surprised he came back at all. I always thought it would be like he's one of those one undone.
Yeah.
And then two undone.
Yeah.
So maybe he'll just keep getting nominated.
Yeah. And this is not the answer to the question, but I am, when skipping back to the earlier question about who we're really excited about, I am so pleased that Melissa McCarthy is a two-time nominee now.
Yes, yep.
Because she definitely seemed like she could be a one and done.
Yeah, oh,
like
yeah,
a novelty
yeah.
nomination for this like broad comic performance.
Yeah. And she's somebody, you know, some people always get nominated for the same performance.
Yeah.
But she is somebody who's like, boom, like the two performances are so different.
Yeah.
So hopefully that bodes well for her longevity. She's obviously a star. She's going to get cast, yeah. you know, but hopefully it bodes well for a variety of parts and movies and collaborators that she gets to work with.
Mm-hmm.
Because she seems to work a lot with her husband. So find the next Marielle Heller, Melissa McCarthy.
Mm-hmm. So we should wrap up, but what I'm gonna be mean for the wrap up so we end on a positive note. It's like a okay. trick.
Okay.
I will say something nice about Bohemian Rhapsody if you say something nice about Green Book.
Oh my god. I don't know if I could do that. I will just say this about Green Book. I'm happy Mahershala got his second nomination. He's an actor I love. I do not love the movie. I do not love his performance, but I love him. I'm excited to see what else he means. I hope him being a two-time Oscar nominee and an Oscar winner means we will get to see him in leads, and he will get to lead movies and be exciting, and we are in for a decade of amazing Mahershala Ali movies.
Okay. I'll say two nice things about Bohemian Rhapsody. I love, just as I loved with Mamma Mia, which I also hated as a movie, that it has made Queen really exciting to a whole new generation of people again. Because in both cases, those are two of the greatest bands of all time. And mm-hmm. so even if it becomes mega popular again through a very questionable artistic project, it still is a great, like, legacy. And
yes.
I'm really happy that people are rediscovering Queen or remembering what a great band that was. Because they were. They're one of the greatest bands ever.
Yeah.
And I also love all the shots of Cats. I thought they were funny and that is actually accurate. The movie cheats a lot about accuracy, mm-hmm. but he really was obsessed with Cats, Freddie Mercury.
So maybe there will be a sequel to Cats, and it will be all music from Queen.
A jukebox musical.
Wow, we really managed to talk about these two movies we don't like with some positivity. That's great. I think that's like a good...
Yes. Yeah. I wanted to keep it mostly positive. Oh, and also I will say on this note, how fucking great is that foreign film category, even though they snubbed Burning?
Yeah, it's pretty fantastic. Like, that is so good. Like, those... I'm not, like, the biggest fan of Never Look Away, but it's still a good movie, and the other four are just masterpieces, so...
Yeah, it's, like, one of the best foreign film lineups ever. In a category that, you know, lately has been, I mean, since they made all the changes to that category with the executive committee and all that, that category in the past 10 years has improved dramatically in terms of quality of nominations. And so now we're getting back to the levels I think it was at in the 60s and 70s sometimes in terms of like very artful films from master world-class directors are getting in regularly, and I'm very happy about it.
Yeah, yeah. They did really well. Now they hopefully they can fix editing. There is your next challenge, Academy.
How about an executive committee with good taste to decide the film editing achievement?
I want to say just one last thing, and it is positive, about the nomination announcement itself, is that the best thing about that nomination announcement was is that nobody talked about it at all. because it was completely forgettable, but people talked about who got nominated, and that's how it should be. So the Academy, whatever you did this year, try to replicate it. Like, even the banter between Tracy Ellis Ross and Kumail Nanjiani was innocuous, about them waking up early in the morning and only between categories. So that was perfect. We never want a nomination announcement to be the conversation. So they did well with that. So keep it up.
They did, and that, this makes this a nice sequel to our last conversation about this. No, they did a good job, and Kumail and Tracy were both adorable. Yeah. And that's all that matters. Just read the names, be cute while you're doing it. Pronounce the names which they did.
Yes.
It was good.
Yeah.
So thanks for listening. Obviously, there's a lot you can react to on the Film Experience this week about the nominations. The robust comments yesterday on nomination day were very exciting to read. I have read every single comment. I have not replied to every single comment, but you guys are a delight when you get involved. This is always an exciting time of year, even when we don't like some of the nominations. Thanks for tuning in. And we will talk to you very soon. Hopefully some new movies will come out that we can talk about.
Yes.
In addition
to
the Oscar race.
Yes.
All right. This is Nathaniel signing off. The Oscar nomination reaction. And thank you, Murtada.
Thank you so much.